You're listening to In the Drink. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli. You know, this is a special season of In the Drink because normally I would be telling you about right now that you can find me at my restaurants, Fausto and Lalu. But unfortunately, the restaurants are closed. So what we're going to do this whole season on Tuesdays and Fridays is bring you stories from around the wine industry as to how this pandemic has affected all different parts of the wine industry. For today's episode, we have Pascaline LePeltier back on In the Drink. Pascaline's a master sommelier and partner at Racines, and she also has a wine project called Chepica. She writes extensively about wine. She also enters competitions and wins them. She is a leading voice in the wine industry. She's someone I look up to greatly. She's for sure an icon, and we're so happy to have her both on In the Drink and really just in the New York wine scene in general. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Thank you, Pascaline. I really appreciate you coming on this.
Very happy to talk to you. It's always a pleasure, you know. It's a bit of brightness in my day.
For me as well. You're one of the busier people I know in the wine industry, not only being a partner in Racines and you have wine projects you're involved in, competing and winning in sommelier competitions, writing. What was your day like before the pandemic, and how has this terrible pandemic changed what your average day is like?
Everything was blurry before, you know, because the day we're quite busy, pretty to an extreme. So in a way, stopping it's a good thing. I had to start to rationalize my day like crazy because the priority has always been the restaurant. But as you mentioned, I always also wanted to keep a fit in a lot of different activities leading to wine because I think it's so crucial for us to keep perspective. And so my day was usually waking up around 7:30, checking and calling people in France. I was preparing a book right now, so I was trying to give myself 2 hours minimum per day to start to work on it and to write it. I was also writing other things for some magazine. Then the restaurant was going very well and we were really trying to do a lot of push. So I was always trying to be at the restaurant between noon to two, usually two when there was tasting during the day. So tasting wine for 1-2 hours, getting the rep appointment, and then from two to usually one, between when I was closing one, when I was not closing 11, I'd be on the floor at the restaurant. So that was kind of the day being in New York before. So long day, but very stimulating day because we were, I think, living a very glorious time for us in the wine industry with amazing, you know, an amazing economy exploding. Guests super interesting to come to a restaurant. You know, you were feeling that it was a really positive energy and that gets you a lot of energy for yourself to keep yourself pushing. And so you couldn't, counting the hours was not a big deal because everything seemed to go fine. And then boom, you're caught off guard and you realize that everything is very, very fragile.
And I'm sorry to hear about that. Obviously, I'm going through something very similar. I'm also working on a book and try to put aside time every day to work on the book, but I find it very challenging for some reason, even though I'm less busy to focus, it seems for some reason harder. Can you tell us about the book at all? Are you still working on it during this time?
Yeah, it's kind of the book I would have liked to read when I started in the business. I've been offered so many times to write books and a lot of books, like books on women, for example, that was kind of the old natural wine book. And I didn't think I was kind of the voice or not the right person for this kind of thing. And so it's going to be a very, very simple book in a way, but it's going to be a book about questions and give tools for the reader to try to understand this amazing world of wine. So it won't be an encyclopedia whatsoever, but kind of what are the questions I'm asking myself if I want to get into the wine world and is going to call for a lot of different fields of knowledge from, of course, chemistry and physics, but also architecture and biology and semiology and aesthetics and all that. So it's going to be a weird book. probably not a bestseller. So, but you know, you were saying that we are confined. And first, congratulations on your book. What are you going to write about?
Italian wine. Big surprise.
Yes. No.
Not a comprehensive book on Italian wine. Really, only the producers who I think are pushing the conversation forward. Independent. Wineries, small producers who are growing organically, naturally, biodynamically, using only indigenous grapes, the kind of wines that I'm most interested in. I don't want it to be, you know, any industrial wines or anything that doesn't really interest me. So it'll be a personal book, maybe not, you know, a bestseller as well, but maybe, I hope so.
So that's great. And when are you, when is it due for?
It's supposed to come out in the spring of 2021.
Whoa, so you are, that's soon.
I have my edits back from my editor now and a timeline to get them back to her. And I hope she's not listening, but I haven't been. It's been hard to concentrate every day for some reason.
You know, it's, I think we are feeling the same things. Like we have time in a way, but we don't really have time because it's almost impossible not to think about the restaurant and the current economy and what's going to be tomorrow. There is no real serenity right now. It's not like it's not do nothing at all. It's absolutely, I almost feel it's the opposite because you cannot stop thinking about what's going to happen. And it's so hard because everything is so uncertain. Everyone seems to be a little bit certain, especially in our business, you know, when we start to hear about our potential economical things that can help us, right away there is a counter offer or the reality is so different and we just have to wait. You know, there is that terrible thing that you feel so frustrated because you can't really do anything. And I have to admit, this is very complicated to focus on something like just, you know, the pure joy of the theoretical joy to write about what we love, you know, because at the end, the reality of the day-to-day reality is terrible. And when you don't think about what's happening in your business, you are thinking about what's happening in the industry and people around you and the human catastrophe that this disease is. So it's hard. It's such a, I don't know for you, but I feel a bit schizophrenic sometimes. This kind of bubble of time. And you know that there is just an absolute chaos outside, you know. So it's very strange, very strange.
I feel the same way, exactly, especially about the uncertainty. And I don't trust anyone who feels very certain about the way things will be because it doesn't. Doesn't seem possible right now to know. But I do know I felt that you were a true leader in going through this, and especially when there was a period of time where it seemed like everyone was starting to get more and more nervous. The restaurants were still open, but it was, throughout March, people were starting to realize how serious this could be. And I really felt that you were doing everything ahead of the curve, ahead of everyone else. You said for Racine, you're going to remove 50% of the seats before it was mandated to do so. And so I feel like you're a very clear thinker when it, you know, when it comes to these things, even in times of confusion. And I wonder where were you looking? Did you just say internally, I thought it's the right thing? Were you looking at things that were going on in maybe in China or somewhere else for inspiration? I just felt like in New York, you're truly like a leader in the way that not only the things that you did, but the way that you communicated them. You just, there was a Facebook post you put up. I thought it was just so eloquent.
Yeah. So that's, I have to give a lot of credit to, we have an amazing general manager right now at the restaurant. His name is Jared David, and Jared came with us like a year ago after working a lot of restaurant industry. And I was looking for somebody to work alongside me and Arnaud to move the restaurant to the next direction. And I was really looking for somebody that knew how complicated it is to run a business in New York. He worked in for the B&B group in critical time. And I was looking for somebody very, very calm that was able to go through things without losing a certain pragmatism. And when everything started, you know, what is amazing is when you have the right team with people with a certain level of experience, you can really go through a lot of brainstorming and say, okay, what do we need to do? How can we do it? And what does make sense? And very early on, we started to talk and we're like, it's going to get really worse very quickly. So how can we make sure that, of course, we need to continue to do a business, but how can we make sure that if we do so, the priority needs to be the health of the guests and the health of the staff? And then we started to think, oh, we need to reduce the capacity. And Jared said, yeah, we have to reduce the capacity. This is a way to go. I totally see that happening. And boom. And then that led to all the reflection about how, but if we do so, how can we still make sure we don't have the same issue, which is everybody wants to come at the same time? And it came up to rethinking the roles of hospitality. And so Jared came out with, we need to write it out and spill it out in a way that it can be useful for absolutely everybody. And then here we are. And it's really fantastic to have somebody by your side that really has this capacity to make it operational, because you can come up with an idea, but if it doesn't make sense in terms of making it happen. So I have to give a lot of credit to Jared. And then I also have a lot of more marketing reach in a way, because I have way more people listening to what I'm putting. So it's we decided to go this way to say, how this is how we're going to work. This is how the team is thinking right now. And if it can be useful for anybody, please just ask us question and we're going to tell you how we did it and what we think is should be the right thing to do. But once again, it was about how to make sure our guests and our staff will be okay while trying still to operate a business in the safest environment.
Today's episode is brought to you by Melio. Melio is the digital payments platform for the wine industry. You can pay all of your wine and spirits distributors from one place and absolutely for free. I love that you can schedule exact payment dates so that you avoid being on COD, or maybe sometimes even worse, especially when cash is tight, paying too early. Melio has all of my favorite distributors on their platform. It's so easy. You add your vendor or bill details, and then you choose if you want to pay by a credit card or through your bank account, and the vendor gets a check or bank transfer. It could not be easier. And one of the great things that I love, especially in these times when cash is tight, is that you can pay with a credit card, even for vendors in which credit cards are usually not accepted. Let Melio handle the payment delivery. There's no monthly fees and no charges to payment receivers. Go to MelioPayments.com, that's M-E-L-I-O, payments.com today and sign up for free. Are you at the point yet where you're starting to plan or think about a reopening day, or is there not enough information that seems too far in the distant future to even think about that yet?
We are like everybody. We are listening to what's happening and looking what's happening everywhere else and seeing what the other countries are going to do, because we know that America and the federal and the state government are going to get inspired by what's happening everywhere else. So we are thinking, because it was one of the way of sort of talking about asking for money for the loan. You know, we had to think about, okay, how long do we think we are going to be out of business? And for us, we don't see any kind of real business back at a certain volume that is reasonable before at least September. Because even if we are opening earlier, we are going to have the distanciation and the lower capacity. And we also know that, or we feel like, restaurant may not be where you're going to want to go first. You know, until there is a real safety, or at least a feeling of confidence that the health issue can be taken care of. So we are thinking at least September is a kind of amount that seems reasonable. And we are already starting to talk about what are we going to do when we can reopen? How are we going to operate? Can we, because we're not going to be able to do exactly the same thing. We need to be very realistic about that. The game change. And so we know that the economical context is going to be totally different, that the way to spend money is going to be totally different, at least for a little while. So what does that mean for us? What does that mean for our colleagues? So we are just throwing out ideas about what we feel will be a new way of eating and seeing, trying to already work on how can we operate with very low operational costs, because we also know that we are going to leave this moment of time with more debt on our shoulder, because we have no grants. You know, like the reality for our industry, whatever you want to say, is currently, until we see what's going to happen, even with the PPP, but all the other option, even the PPP option, but the other option are loans. So mm-hmm. we are talking about more money spent on operational. So how can we make everything happen well back? And that's a strategy. And I think now you need to really stay calm and quiet and be just very realistic, very realistic.
Has the pandemic affected your wine projects, Chepica or Nathan Kay?
So so like everybody else, and yes, Nathan, like Chepica itself a little bit, because we were supposed to bottle the rosé and you can't find bottles. so just, you know, very practical stuff, which when you start to talk with a lot of friends winemaker, you realize that this is such a critical moment. But because it's a bottling time, is when you start to ship all your current, like the new vintage, is a lot of cash flow for people that are usually coming to the bank account that are going to allow them to buy the grapes in the fall. You know, so it's like the whole economy of small growers is totally upside down, and even bigger growers. And Nathan, in his case, it's for his label, he was supposed to sell a lot of wine to New York and distributors, and nothing is going out right now. So he has to move to a B2C, a direct-to-consumer model. Not anybody's going to the tasting room. There is no tasting room. So it's a very complicated moment for him. And for Chepica, we are still trying to plan a release in May. So we need to find the bottle for the rosé, to be able to bottle the rosé. And we shall see. The big advantage that we have is our production is very tiny. And it's not a money project at all. We make no money out of that project. It's more a passion discussion project. So the production we are going to sell in New York to retailer, but we are supposed to sell to France this year and to the UK and to Sweden and to Japan, and nothing.
Do you have a sense as to why there's a glass bottle shortage?
Oh, it's just because you can't ship stuff, like especially when you're getting stuff out of the States, and they stop the line production because it's not an essential business. Even bottling, you know, it's complicated. If you don't have your own bottling line and with like the safety protection, like it's crazy. It's like suddenly you realize that we are so interconnected for so many things. So I think Nathan is going to be able to buy bottles to another winery, but still the bottling is going to be really artisanal, like by hand. And I can't even go and help him over there. So it's like, and he's going to have to disgorge everything by hand. And like, it's going to be, he's just too, like, this crazy. But it's small problems compared to really, to really what's happening. But it's, mm-hmm. I think the wine industry is going to, is going to be a really, really, really complicated thing for the wine industry in general this year.
What lasting effects for the wine industry do you think there will be? You know, you see so much of the industry. You have a lot of different perspectives, and I wonder if you have the sort of overarching feel as what sort of lasting effects you might see.
I can talk a little bit for Europe and France, but France, we were out of a couple of very hard vintages. You know, a lot of people lost crops over the years, so a lot of structure were already quite fragile in terms of their finances. So right now they can't sell 19, which is a pretty big vintage. It was a good vintage, a lot of volume, but everything is stopped. So you can't sell anything. So same thing, you have the problem of cash flow, reimbursing any type of equipment or things like that. So when we are going to be able to buy again, I'm sure we're not going to buy into the same volume and proportion. And if you can buy, you're probably going to have a lot of discount. And when we're going to be able to buy, you're probably going to start to have 19 and 20 in the pipe. So that's going to be something. You have areas like I was talking this morning with a producer in Champagne, and probably the price of the Champagne this year is going to totally collapse, and maybe they're also going to control the volume. So that's what we're going to see. Too much volume, people fragile, not cash getting in. A lot of estate right now in France have a shortage of labor, which is an issue also. So those people that were already maybe behind on, you know, needed to kind of improve some viticultural things are not able to do the job right now. It's going to be a problem. Champagne, to go back to that, they were talking about, they usually do harvest with, you know, you need about 100,000 people to do harvest in Champagne. And usually you have people coming from the eastern country or from the southern France, and they have no idea how they're going to be able to bring everybody to do harvest this year. So you have all that. And for the US, you just have a lot of stocks that are unsold. And for people that can't sell their stock now, how is they going to be able to buy grapes in the fall? And if you can't buy grapes or less grapes, how are the growers going to live? Because they're going to depend on the price of the grapes. So the price of the grapes is going to decrease, and you're going to start a recession and all that. So at least in terms of the production, it's quite a critical year. And because the vintage was so, like 18 was a good vintage in Europe and 19 with volume, this is exactly the type of vintage when you start to put yourself for some investment for whatever in the winery, in a vineyard, you know, you can buy, I don't know, from new tanks to new machine or things like that. So now you'll get all these loans on top of it.
Yeah. We had a few small vintages with hail issues recently as well. So they're probably excited to have a big voluminous vintage like 19.
Yeah, but I'm sure you can see that in Italy. It's
for sure.
So yeah, you know, when you see in Europe, they're talking about getting money from the European Union to distill, because like the people, especially in large volume areas, are already saying that 20 seems to be a pretty high yielding vintage. So they may already, which, you know, we don't even know, the flowers didn't even happen, but they're already asking for authorization to potentially distill and funding for distillation. You know, it's upside down crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's always a bad incentive when people have to distill.
It's a bad incentive. So, but at the same time, you know, you can see that there is it's like us, I think, the people that at least I'm in connection with, they are really wanted to, they aren't even spending that much time in the vineyard. They're really believing they have to do the best they can. They're working really, really hard, and they're hoping that at the end there will be something, you know, which what we're all hoping for. Like, and we need to hope. We need to hope, otherwise it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, have you found anything that gives you some hope or that's inspirational to you in any way?
Yeah. Like the ways that I think more than ever, I was very impressed by how certain of our colleagues started to work as an association or kind of a union. I think that has been fantastic to see that, which is something you don't really usually see in the US. We see more that in France, you know, this ability to get together and to become political and to gather our strength to try to get heard for everybody in our small restaurant industry, you know, small businesses, small independent restaurant. I think that has been really a very powerful thing to see that you can be contacted and you see people that are putting that together, and then we can talk, we can exchange, and then can try to push messages at the political level. That has been really fantastic to see that. That's a very strong message of hope for me for the future, to see how trying to help people that are redoing the work by fundraising or getting the money for that. That's also been very, very positive to see that, which I think it's a big reflection to how to operate in the future or businesses. That's for me, it's a big take, I'm saying. There is a real will from you know, grassroots will to be part of what it's a needed revolution for us. And hopefully that's something that can continue once the crisis is over, because we really need some changes and political changes of how we're able to operate a business. Because I'm sure we are the same together, you know, we want to give way more to the staff and we want to try to be forward thinking leaders and business owner, but it's really difficult financially to be able to do so in the actual way of running at least a restaurant business in New York. So how can we change that? And we also, we need that to be part of a political change.
I agree with you. Yeah, I always felt that the restaurant industry, at least in New York, is much more supportive and less competitive than a lot of people might think that it is. But it sounds to me like you think that this will bring us even closer together and have us help each other out even more.
Yeah, I think so, and I hope so. You know what Greg at Homestead and this guy started and put like the restaurant coalition, and you see a lot of very strong men and women, and especially in Brooklyn, I have to say, putting together all these different union associations to protect the workforce and starting from the base and doing all these different movements were very important. And it's, you know, now we are seeing that at least bigger names try to have a here at the highest political level, at least for the next round of planning. I don't know if it's not the first time that this kind of restaurant have been able to be heard in Washington. And I think it was something that started to be seen before, because we saw something slightly happening with all the issue of sexual harassment last year, and a new generation of colleagues and especially of staff members asking for, calling out for responsibility and responsabilization and forcing in a way to talk about it and to start to take leadership decision about it. And I think that more than what we're also seeing today is that. And I think this is the prolongation of very powerful movement from the roots to change a situation that has been quite comforting for some time and pushing us to take the responsibility to take this issue at all level, but also at a federal and a state level, because we can't just do it by ourselves. It has to be something way bigger and stronger. So I think that's very important.
That's a great point. And I guess to finish on a personal note, I just wonder, how has this been affecting your personal wine consumption? Are you still able to drink good wine? Or
I've been a terrible supporter of the wine industry. Like, honestly, the first 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I didn't drink anything. My wife can't drink right now for health issue too. So I'm like, we're two at home and I'm not kind of popping off corks. And my body kind of, I was so under a lot of psychological stress, I just couldn't handle alcohol well. But now I've been imbibing like one or two glasses a day. Little by little. So I've been very reasonable with my personal, which is no good, because I should buy way more wine to support the industry. So I'm a very bad supporter. But I've been starting to buy a bit more again.
Can I ask where are you buying wine from?
I'm buying either directly from wineries. Like, it's also kind of, you want to try to give directly to the producer. I think right now it's very important to go to short circuits and breweries, because I love beer. So I've been buying direct brewery from New York. And then I buy some wine from friends in different wine shop. Of course, Chambers or Manhattan Wine Company. And you can see all the wine shop we like. They also need to deliver in Harlem West, where I am, which not everybody is delivering right now for safety condition, but I'm working with this wine shop that are also helping out restaurant and coalition of workers, you know, of course. More than ever, I think when we're going to get out of that craziness, it's going to continue to affect how I'm buying into who I want to work with. I was already a pretty big deal for us, but I think it's going to take a whole different dimension. Because if we can't be heard by the way we vote or talking to our representant, we can definitely vote by the way we buy.
That's a great point. And we'll finish at that. Well, thank you so much, Pascaline. You're a leader and an inspiration. And I learn every time I speak with you, and I always enjoy it. I cannot wait to come back to Racine's once this opens.
My God. very same thing. Yeah, I really miss you, Joe. Thanks for everything you're doing and keeping the spirits of fight and hope, you know, that we need.
So that's it for this episode of In the Drink with Pascaline LePeltier. Big thank you to all of you for listening. I so appreciate it. I also want to give a big thanks to Jessamine Molly, our producer. She's of Seaplane Armada, and she is working tirelessly to make sure that we're getting you two episodes a week, both on Tuesdays and Fridays. I also want to give a big thanks to our sponsors, 750 and Melio. You know, I really appreciate their support, especially in these challenging times. Being able to have them on board allows us to bring you these episodes. So please go check out what they're doing. Thank you again so much, and see you on Tuesday. Today's episode is brought to you by 750.com. If you're a buyer in the beverage industry, you probably know that 750 is the place to find new products for your beverage program. But you may not know that 750 is also the best place to set up a digital ordering process. It's so easy. All you do is find the product you want, build your cart, just the way you would with any other online ordering system, and you can send an order directly to any of your vendors. If you need an additional hand, you can always reach out to Matt at 750.com. That's M-A-T-T at 750 spelled out .com. And he'll help you submit your first order. I also want to let you know about a cool new feature, which is a live chat. It's in the marketplace, and it was launched specifically to support buyers during the coronavirus pandemic. 750.com, find everything you need in one place. Search and order all products from all distributors, all online.